The Football Show on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Join the Save Our Shirt movement today. More at saveourshirt.co.uk.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to make my country again.
Do it then. What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Now, you're very welcome along to the Football Show, and I'm delighted to say we have David Myler in studio. You're very welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks for popping in. So you did commentary for us last Thursday on the Switzerland match, and we said you'd come on in and have a chat, and that is the plan, to reflect, I guess, a bit on your career. 30 years of age, retirement. That was not the plan.
No. Obviously, every kid dreams of being a footballer, and then when you become a footballer, you want to play as long as you can. Obviously, you look at certain players, Ryan Giggs played till he was 40, Teddy Sheringham was like 42. I'd love to have played for as long as I could, but I sustained such a bad injury in 2010.
Cruciate.
I did my cruciate lateral medial, ripped bone off my kneecap and snapped, I'm going to say, my bicep femur. It's basically the side of your knee that like allows it all to move. I ripped that off, so it had to be reattached. So basically I made a complete mess of my knee.
How did that happen?
Tackle. I went into tackle Patrice Evra, and basically he just leant across me, and I was coming in, and I basically, my knee just went like a pretzel. I fell onto it. Made a complete mess of it. So then that happened. It was quite funny at the time, you know. I'd never had a bad injury or whatever, and I remember the physio come running on, and he was like, "Oh, you okay?" And I was like, "Oh, I've collided knees. I just need a minute. Give me a minute there, and I'll be all right." So I said, "Get me the sideline," and he said, "Look, let me just test everything." And basically, they pull the front of your kneecap out to test your cruciate, and he said, "Mine came out like a meter." He said, "No, it's gone." Mm. So then that was that.
Because usually players say they hear a pop or a snap.
I don't remember. Mm. I have heard players after say that they heard something. I didn't hear anything.
And was it a clumsy tackle in any way on your part? Were you doing anything you shouldn't have been doing? Were you trying to go in a bit too hard, or was it just freaking?
Probably. You could probably put a case forward. I was too eager to get the ball. You know, it was my first time playing against Man United.
Who did you support growing up?
Liverpool. I was just probably too eager to get the ball, and then one thing led to another. He just kind of, I suppose the phrase in football is, he waits to me. He just knocked me off, and I was off balance. I kind of came in with my shoulders open and fell back and went flat. And look, so that was it. Did all that. The surgeon told me I'd never play again.
Is that right?
Yeah. And even he said, like, if you were to make a miraculous recovery, it'd be 18 to 24 months before you play.
That's devastating news to get. What age were you then?
20, turning 21. And that was actually my first call up for Ireland. Ireland played, I can't remember. It was Armenia. I think Ireland played Armenia. So it'd been the end of May 2010. I had gotten a phone call at the start of the week before saying, like, you know, that there was talks I was going to be in the Ireland squad or whatever. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. Blah, blah, blah. And then obviously that came. And then all of a sudden, you're hearing that you might not be able to play football again. And then I just said to the surgeon, like, I said, just do your work and I'll be fine. And he's like, you know, the way surgeons are, if any surgeons watching it, some of them are cocky. It's just the way they are. He was like, I don't worry about my job, I worry about you. I said, I don't worry about me, I worry about you. So it was a good combination, and basically got me back. Took me about 8 months, I got back playing, but then I did my cruciate again.
Were you rushed back coming back after 8?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it would be unfair of me to say, like, Steve Bruce's manager, he didn't rush me. The physio was Dave Binsley I worked with. Neither one of them rushed me. I felt I was ready. The second time was just a freak incident where I've gone to put my leg in the air and come down on it.
Same leg. That was in January 2011.
Yeah.
You'd hurt yourself in May 2010. Surgeons telling you 18 months. Because when I said, did you rush back? Did you rush yourself back?
No, I felt good. Yeah. I felt good.
And so you did the ligament again.
Mm. Yeah.
What'd your surgeon say to you?
He said, well, you've done it once, you can do it twice. And he said, you'll still be back before. The second time was nowhere near as bad as the first, but he joked saying you'll be back before your original first date of 18 to 24 months. But then I suppose I spent the next 7-8 months recovering, like playing reserve games, got back, and then Steve Bruce unfortunately got sacked, and that's when Martin took over. That's why people kind of say to me, oh, you didn't play a lot under Martin at Sunderland. I was like, the problem was Martin needed me 100% ready to go, and I probably needed 2 months of 30 minutes here, 40 minutes here, an hour there. And look, it's the Premier League, managers don't have time to be giving young fellas games here and there, and there's only so much you can get out of reserve games.
So to stay with the injury for a second then, you get back again a second time, and here we are 8 years later. So across these 8 years, are you inhibited? Are you having to sit out training? Do you get back to feeling I'm 100% here, I've reached my full potential? How's your body across these 8 years?
I've never been 100%. Like it's hard because, you know, like my mom, my dad, my wife never really understood the extent of it. My dad, to be fair to him, reckons he did from the start of, I can say in the last year, he said he doesn't look right. He only told me that last week, or 2 weeks ago. It was the first time he said it to me. My wife thought it was all in my head. She thought, oh, you're fine, you train and you play. Probably to my own dumb fault, I trained all the time. Rather than, like, you know, people do take days. I trained all the time. I never wanted to miss training because I kind of felt it was best for me if I was training every day leading up to a game. I learned how to deal with my own body. Like, I know my own body, and then I just haven't been right.
And so when you say I haven't been right, how does that manifest itself? Is it pain? Is it I'm not quite able to turn in a certain situation the way I would like?
Yeah. But like,
or what is it?
I sat down with somebody I trust. I won't go into too much detail who it was, just in case he doesn't want it known. I sat down with him and we had a conversation. Like, I think I was with him for 2.5 hours. And he said, like, what were you known for? And I was like, look, I was one of those fellas who was known for getting up and down a pitch, closing fellas down, winning the ball back, like inevitably being what is called a rat, and you give the ball to the better player. I've no problem with that. I made a career out of it. I've no argument with that. I felt I couldn't do that like I used to be able to.
Okay.
And then also there's the pain. Like, even what do we know? Today is whatever it is, Tuesday, Wednesday. I was like with my daughter playing football with, we've some friends back in England and playing with their kids, and I feel pain in my knee playing in the garden. I'm just like, this isn't right, do you know what I mean? But like, there's times, you know, even when I did the game with you on Thursday, you're thinking, oh, I could still be out there, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, but then it's just that one moment of 5 minutes in the back garden, I did make the right decision, because inevitably I've made the decision myself. I could have tried all different things. Would they have worked? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think they would have. I went and got the best advice I could. And even people I'd spoken to, physios and doctors, said, like, you could have had this conversation 2 years ago. Do you know what I mean? That's the condition my knee was in.
Right. So, because you did reach such a summit. Like, you're playing in an FA Cup final, you're scoring goals against Liverpool, you know, your first goal against Liverpool. I was looking at your stats, like a lot of Premier League years for Hull where you're hitting 28 appearances, 30 appearances, like you're churning out top level football. Was pain almost a daily, weekly thing for you, even in those good years, what looked like good years?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I was never away from it, but...
We are popping painkillers to get through life.
I wouldn't say through life, through games and whatever, but... Like, even you find me a footballer that's 100% fit.
Sure. And I'm sure that's what you told yourself.
Yeah. There's nobody. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Everybody, like, you know, boys are getting massages because, you know, like, I've been very fortunate that I've never really had muscle injuries. So mine has been kind of like my knees, which is the structures. Now it's caught up with me now. But back then, I could find a way to get through.
Yeah. Do you know what your dad meant when he said you never looked quite right? Did you ask him, what do you mean, or what did he say?
No, I knew what he meant. It's the ability to get to you if you pop it there. Like, you know, everybody's watched this, obviously has watched Spain and Barcelona, the tiki-taka, the 5 yards. I could get to you, get to him, get back, get to you, get to him, back, without breaking sweat. and then it becomes a chore that you're trying to get there and you're trying to push off, like, mainly my right knee, and it's just not.
Because Michael Owen talked brilliantly a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago on BT Sport, about going from the 18-year-old body to the 33-year-old body. Lots of moments in game where the frustration is just like, ugh, I know I'm not doing what I could do. I know I should be on his shoulder, and actually I'm coming short, and that's not me.
Yeah.
You must relate to that.
Certainly, but I think if you, like, when you say Michael Owen, you've got a fella from 17 to 25 who's known for his explosive pace, getting in behind fellas, getting down the sides. He was the one, like, you look at the goal he got, I'm going to say 2003, maybe. One with Liverpool against Arsenal.
The FA Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah. One, I think, but yeah.
Yeah, it's one, I'm sure, yeah. It's when they won the treble.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he just, like, he takes off, and nobody, like,
can't catch him.
Yeah, even if you look at the goal and, you know, against Argentina 98 or whatever. Mm. Like, so then for him, it was probably a bigger thing.
Okay.
But then, in a sense that when you're a striker and you're known for your pace,
yeah,
and then you're coming short, you're thinking, well, I actually want to be facing the goal, running at the goal, rather than coming short, as you said, laying it off. Whereas for me, it was, a lot of it didn't change in the sense of, like, I'll just get the ball and you give it to the better player.
Yeah.
You give it to the creative one, the one who's going to make something happen. It was just my, like, little ability to close down, and, do you know what I mean?
Subtle things.
Yeah.
And 30 years old, retired, like, this is tough. You know, there's no point shirking it. It's tough. Do you feel shortchanged? Are you a bit sickened by the way it's all gone? One moment,
no,
in 2010.
No, because I can't. Do you know, if, like, people say, like, one of my buddies said, have you any regrets? And I said, well, I can't have regrets, because the first thing I'd say was, would I have gone in for that tackle? Do you know, who knows what could have been? Do you know what I mean? Was I ever the same? Like, before, I was quick, like. I wouldn't say I'm slow, like, but, like, do you know what I mean? I was quick back then. Before that, I could never hit the same speeds.
Mm.
But do I have regrets? No, I can't. I've been so lucky to do what I've done.
Mm.
In the sense of, like, when I look back on it, I've great pride in what I've achieved. Mm. Do you know what I mean? The moments I've shared with my family. Do you know what I mean? Like, my daughter being at games. Do you know, even the Wales game, just to think my daughter was there at home watching that. Do you know, it's small things like that that matter, and I'd rather look back on them than what could have been.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
And it's, that probably is your only option, because otherwise the next 40 years are full of bitterness.
Yeah.
And that doesn't seem like the type of person you are.
When I was a kid, I had a dream to play for Ireland and score at Anfield. Mind, albeit, it was play for Ireland.
For Liverpool.
For Liverpool. Yeah. Now, I'll tell you a good story. I went to the Champions League final in Madrid. Jordan Henderson would be a good friend of mine. Obviously, people know I play with Andy Robertson and whatever. So I went with Jordan's family, whatever. But I met King Kenny after, and he was like, "How are you?" and all, blah, blah, blah. Kenny was actually going to sign me when he signed Jordan for Liverpool, but I'd done my cruciate. And he talks about it in his book. And he said, "Oh, what could have been?" And I said, "Oh, let's not get it started now." I said, "But look, do you know what I mean? What? How many people are watching this could say, oh."
I know, but you can only judge your own life by its own potential sometimes.
Yeah, like I go home, like, even for the last probably 4 to 5 years, I go home during the summer. I'll go home for a week or 2 weeks, and I'll go up and I'll play 5-a-side with the lads. They play in, like, a competitive league on a Monday night or whatever. I'll join in.
Mm.
It was quite funny, like, because they say you need to wear a light blue top because that's our jersey, like, the lads. But I used to, some people are into it, some aren't, you know, collecting shirts. I like shirts.
Mm.
That's just me.
Mm.
I used to rock up, like, if it was Chelsea, like, they say dark blue, I'd wear Lampard's top, or I'd have David Silva's on. And, you know, they'd have the gold print on here, the badges, like, to say they were Premier League winners. And my buddies would be like to me, "You should see your man playing here in the 5-a-side. He's unbelievable." And I was like, going, "Yeah, Nisha."
So you're a football fan as well.
Yeah, that's what. But that's one of the biggest annoying things that you got to remember. If you go back when you were 11, 12, 13,
sure,
you fell in love with a football team,
yeah,
a football player. I was the same.
Yeah, obsessed.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was it. you know what I mean? I've buddies back home. Like, I have a buddy, Kellogg's, who supports more clubs than, like, Tiger Woods has played with, do you know? Like, I have a buddy then who's a diehard Liverpool fan. I have a buddy who's a diehard Newcastle fan.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, I grew up supporting Liverpool.
Yeah.
And that was just the way, like, that's the thing is, I was Liverpool and Roy Keane, because Roy Keane was Cork and he was everything, you know, you want. If being from Cork, you aspired, like, you look at this fella, if he can do it, I can do it. Do you know what I mean? That was kind of the thing, like, and that's like, you're a football fan, and then you, just because, like, people then say, like, oh, I chant for Liverpool, and you look at my record against Liverpool, it's pretty decent. I think the last three times I played them at home, I hope we beat them. Do you mean, all right, we got pumped away 5-1, I scored, but, like, my record against Liverpool is quite good, so it was never kind of like, oh, I want Liverpool to win.
So you said the dream was like Ireland as well, and the pinnacle was Ireland, and you were involved in big days. One all the way to Germany jumps to mind, away to Wales jumps to mind. Can you tell us about them? Like, it's worth reliving a few of them, the memories, what images are popping into your head there? I'm sure your family are there for a start.
Yeah. The Germany one came a bit as a surprise. I believe we played Gibraltar a few days before Germany. I can't remember, it's a shame to pick up a knock or whatever. And obviously there was myself and Cyrus. Now obviously Martin knew me from Sunderland and kind of knew me well enough. Cyrus hadn't played much international football at the time. So then Martin came to him and was like, I might put you right back, so think about it. Obviously he hadn't his mind made up or whatever. And then, lo and behold, I played Gibraltar. I think we won 7-0. I think Robbie got a hat-trick in the first 20 minutes or whatever. So then was like kind of like, all right, you've passed. But I was thinking, like, Gibraltar's one thing, Germany's another, like.
Yeah.
But, like, do you know, there's people throw out, like, you play for Ireland, I'd play anywhere. I just wanted the green shirt and I wanted to play. That was it. Like, there's no better feeling than, you know what I mean, standing out there and the national anthem comes on and, you know, like, you're not playing, like, you're playing for your family, your friends, the country. Do you know what I mean? You're playing for everyone and it means so much to so many people.
Would you get emotional during the anthem? Would you think of those things?
I wouldn't say I get emotional. Like, I know what you mean. Like, you know, Johnny Hayes, the player for Ireland or whatever, he got very emotional during the national anthems. I wouldn't get like that, like, but I suppose it put a bit of fire in your belly, like, you know, it's like you're going to war, like, you're going to represent your country against another country, like, so.
Yeah, this, it touches something primal.
Yeah,
it
does, yeah. Yeah, it does.
And John O'Shea scores the goal and it's a magical night, and are you down to your family that night, or are they?
No, do you know what? So where you come out of the tunnel with the fans, the Ireland fans were over in the far corner, John scored in that goal. It was in Gaelshirken.
Yeah.
So we went over to the fans after to clap them and whatever, and you know, obviously there was a huge turnout. But I was walking back in just behind the dugout, and my mum and dad were there. And my dad was like, tears of joy, and my mum's like, I know, like, you don't even know, like, you know. And I remember my dad said he had to drive to Amsterdam after the game straight away and then fly home to Cork. And then he said, like, we've had many, many a great night, but we've had many a miserable night. Like, journey, he says, a 40-minute journey can feel like 5 hours. But he said that night, he said, like, the car drove itself. Like, do you know what I mean? It's just, like, it was, God, it's stuff
you try.
Yeah, it's like,
do you mean to make your dad feel like that, and for him to have his son doing that? How do you even?
Do you know what I mean? You think, like, you know, oh, he'd be like all the time, I'm proud of you. My dad's only told me he's proud of me three times, something.
When?
Premier League debut, Ireland debut, when I captained Ireland. And it's like, but it means a lot more to me. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, I've done all right, haven't I? Do you know what I mean? Like, so, no, it definitely, I come from the old school parenting. Like, I remember there's many times I've had an argument with him. I says, I don't need a coach, I need a father. Do you know what I mean? Step back and, like, look at it differently. Do you know?
So he'd be heavy with the advice on your game and what he thought and how you looked and how you played, do you mean?
Yeah, like, I remember it was a great game. There was a great one I played under Steve Bruce for Hull and whatever. And I thought, look, anytime my buddy say, how did you get on? I always say, I did all right.
Yeah.
I'd never say, like, if I was awful, I'd say, I did all right. If I was brilliant, I'd say, I did all right. Just because it was kind of the safe. Do you know, I remember Steve Bruce, I came into the thing and Steve Bruce was like, oh, Myler, you were brilliant. I went outside then into the players' lounge, my dad was sitting there, and he was just staring at me. And I was like, all right, like, you know, because it's like the manager giving me the approval. Mm. And he was just staring at me, and I said, well, I said, the manager's happy, so I don't really care what you think. And he was like, was he watching the same game as I was? But he watches me in everything from 0 to 90.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? If there's, like, he just wants me to do well. Mm. He was never too hard, do you know what I mean? Mm.
So you captain Ireland in that famous Wales game. The 1-0 win. I think that's the jersey, isn't it?
That's there, the shirt
in
there.
Studio, yeah.
It is, yeah. The right one place. He gave in.
Courtesy of your dad. Yeah. Look, he wants you front and centre. He wants people. Don't forget Myler was captain that night. That's what he wants.
We
had him in a couple of weeks ago, actually. He's great. So that's big. I mean, that's really big. Your memories of it. When did you find out you were captain?
Well, I was captain against Moldova. And even like Seamus had obviously broken his leg.
Yeah.
Seamus is in all camps for the games. And he was like, you know, talking to me, and we were trying to like figure out who's going to play, you know, and whatever. And Seamus just turned to me and he said, I think you'll be captain. I was like, I won't be captain. I said, I might not play. Mm. And he said, Seamus, no, you'll play and you'll be captain. And I was like, no, I won't. And then I was. And then obviously we beat Moldova. And then it was just like, you go to Wales and obviously James scores. I think it was on the hour mark. Mm. Like, it was just, like, for me, that night epitomised Irish kind of football. You know, we were up against it. It was tough, you know. Like, the goal, you look at the work rate of Jeff, like he doesn't give up on the ball, yeah. Keeps it in. And it's not only he picks it in, like, I know Harry's come out after and he said, like, oh, I heard, like, you know, Jacks are over or whatever. Harry's not. No, Harry's just trying to get out of the way. He's found himself too close to goal. Mm. Then it falls to James and, like, it's on his right foot and he beautifully strikes it, like. But once we'd scored, that was it. I knew we wouldn't draw, we wouldn't get beat. Mm.
You were all too in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was funny because the manager had come to us before and said, look, lads, just to make you aware, I don't know if you know, but they're gonna cut their national anthem.
Oh, yeah, they went a cappella, yeah.
Yeah, and that probably helped us. Like, I remember giving the talk in the, like, you know, and I've probably never been more pumped up for one game. Mm. And, like, the lads even still talk to me about it, like, kind of going, oh, geez, I remember your speech.
Do you remember what you said, or was it how you said it?
I think it came from the heart, like, it came, like, you know, like, there was a bit of swearing about them, do you know what I mean? This isn't about them, it's about us. Do you know what I mean? They're standing in our way to, like, what we want to achieve. Mm. You know, a bit more explicit stuff, but...
Sure, of course, yeah. That was the message.
It comes out, like, and, yeah. You know, I was shaking, and, like, obviously, as you're in, I'm shaking, the boys can feel, like, you know... But, like, they knew I was ready for whatever was in front of me. Mm. Like, there was a wall, I was going through it, like, there was nothing. And, like, you know, people talk about the Denmark game. Like, and this is the God's honest truth. The hardest thing for me was looking at Seamus after, because I'm really close to Seamus. And
it's the 5-1 game, yeah.
Because, God's honest truth, I wanted to get that World Cup, not for me, but for Seamus.
Why Seamus?
Because it's about the type of fella he is, everything about him. Like, I admire him. And I played with him since he was under 21 or whatever, but I just admired the man, and I, like, everything about him. Like, he is the perfect role model. He's, like, I have a daughter. He's the kind of fella you'd want your daughter to bring home. He is that, like, he's top of the range, like, mm. And I really wanted to get to the World Cup for him, to watch him lead Ireland out. Mm. As weird as, like, people might say, oh, but that's, like, that's our friendship and how, like, you know, that's how I think of him. Mm. Because he is, like, I was gutted for him, do you know?
I mean, the whole country, it was horrible. And the night he broke his leg was a dark night as well. What was your experience of the O'Neill Keane era? Because it has been much discussed.
Yeah. Like, look, you ask anyone who played regularly, they won't say a bad word, because they played. You ask anyone who didn't play, they'll kind of say, oh, this, that, and the other. It's the way it goes. in any way of life, any walk of life, like, do you know what I mean?
Well, you didn't always play, so you're actually a good barometer.
Yeah, but I had, like, you look at whenever I was fit, I was always in Martin squad. Like we two campaigns, you know what I mean, the last 16 of the Euros, and then obviously to lose to Denmark in the playoffs. Like, that is good. That's good work, like, considering, like, what we qualified for, five major tournaments. Do you know, like,
the things which have overshadowed it. So I totally accept that's a good innings on paper.
Yeah.
That's it. We're Ireland, you know, we've got to be realistic as well. The two things which have overshadowed are, one, the constant kind of murmurs about lack of preparation on the training field, lack of detail to the players, things like the team being named an hour before. So address that one first. Is there some fair criticism in that? Because it seemed like an old school camp in that regard.
I've played for managers who've named the team on a Tuesday before Saturday. I play with managers who've named it on a Thursday or Friday before Saturday. And I played for managers who've named it on a Saturday. Is any way better than the other? No. Because if you announce a team on a Tuesday, you're going to upset some fellas. So then does the standard of training go to, like, it could change. Like, even on a Thursday, Friday, you could upset lads. Now, I understand if you name it on the Saturday before kickoff, it can upset fellas. But my way of looking at it would be that Martin would name his team when he did, so that, like, I believe everyone had a chance of playing up until that last moment we finished training before we prepared. Now, you could obviously, if you do double games, then double qualifiers, then, you know, inevitably if the team in the first game does well, then they'll probably play the second game, which is fine. But the thing is, like, fellas can complain about it and say, like, that they didn't know. Martin would always, before, like, before every game, say, do you understand what you're doing? If you don't, come and see me. Now, I understand. I'd go and see him. James would go and see him. James McLean would go and see him. Other fellas mightn't. And that just be, that might be just, they might have only been in six to ten camps. Don't feel they have that relationship with the manager. But in hindsight, like, if you were an international player and you're playing for Ireland, you must be playing regularly at your club. You must be doing all right. So it kind of equals, you should know what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's not as if Martin is asking you, if you're a right back, say, look, can you play up front?
Sure. The second thing which cropped up was, well, I suppose there's, you know, the WhatsApp message as an example. And Lord knows, trust me, in my life over the last week, I never want to talk about that WhatsApp message again.
Yeah.
But as an example, and you saw Roy defend himself, like, staunchly the other night. But this sense, like, there's a bad atmosphere, there was too much rah, rah, rah. You know, I remember Martin in a press conference with you, I think it was after that WhatsApp came out, you did a press conference and he said, like, me and him had a right cuff off each other.
Yeah, we
not
did.
Not so long ago. Was it ill-tempered? Was it worse, rather, than what you might have experienced at a standard Premier League?
No, do you know what, right? I joked to you after he had done that, you did that with Roy on the Wednesday, and then I joked to you on Thursday. There was more arguments that nobody's ever heard about.
I've no doubt, of course.
Yeah. And I'm not saying, and not for a second saying Roy was involved, but it was like the manager and different players, players on players. Do you know what I mean? The whole lot. I fell out with Martin because obviously I'd come off the back of, like, the Denmark, the Wales, the Moldova, and yes, Martin had a case. I wasn't playing regularly at Reading at the time. We played Wales away. And on the Saturday morning, I think we played them on Friday. We trained on the Saturday morning. And I was annoyed. And I have to hold my hands up. I didn't train the way I should have trained.
Yeah, you were peeved. Bit of a sulk.
I was completely sulked.
Yeah.
And he pulled me one side. And he just said, like, what's your story? And then, like, I was like, well, I'm not happy I didn't play and blah, blah, blah. And we had it back in front. And, like, that, everyone was kind of like, oh, what's going on here? Because he pulled me out of training. And, like, but it's normal.
Yes.
You know, it's some parts of it are normal. No. Like, the WhatsApp thing, I think the big thing was, it was an in-house argument that happened and it got leaked out. It's nothing, like, arguments aren't something we've seen before between different players and
it's
what
just,
have you.
It's just when it becomes public.
And then the detail word even intel on the WhatsApp.
Yeah, I'm sure his WhatsApp message to his mates are less interesting these days.
Yeah. But it's just, look, these things happen.
Sure.
Do you know?
But you didn't feel it was anything.
I didn't think it was as big as it was.
Yeah.
Like, I've been involved in club level where I've seen, you know, players squaring up to managers, like being pulled apart, like fellas threatened to do all sorts to fellas, you know.
It's that type of environment.
Yeah, like Paul McShane. I played with Paul at Sunderland, at Hull. I probably had more fights with Paul than I have with my wife. And she hates me. No, but like I'm saying, me and Paul went hammer and tongue at it every weekend.
Why?
If we didn't win. No, lucky enough, that team at Hull we played and we won a lot in the championship, whatever. Mm. But whenever we didn't win, it was two men who only wanted to win. Didn't care how we won, as long as we won. Mm. And the blood would boil and we just go at it. Like, there's been punches thrown, there's been a lot. But
you and McShane?
Yeah. Yeah, but you see, that's the thing, right? But then on the morning, there was one time it got a bit too heated and Paul came to me on the Monday and he was like, look, Dave, I said, don't bother. I said, forget about it.
No need to apologise.
And he looked at me like, kind of like, because some lads can't take it. I was like, Paul did that because we didn't win. Mm. Not because he didn't like me.
Of course. But that would be the complaint, I suppose. There are some people who can take it.
Yeah.
And there are some who can't. And you have to manage accordingly. And that might be where the ill-tempered environment gets to certain lads and it mightn't get to others. And that could be the failing you could point at when it comes to someone as tough as Roy. Because even on the other night he said, lots of lads took it, was no problem. Others couldn't, and then...
I reckon I've had my... I don't want to go into too much. I reckon I've had more off Roy than others have. No.
Did it bother you?
No.
Okay.
Because he wanted me to do well.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I remember, he used to come and watch Hull games, and like I knew he'd be at the game because Roy's Roy, like, so, you know, somebody would say it to me, and then I'd say, like, I'd ask him how I got on, and he'd go into depth analysis about me, like, and about the game and what I can do better and what I can improve on.
Would he? Because that's interesting, because the picture has been painted that you wouldn't have got that detail or wouldn't have got those observations from him.
Yeah, but it goes back to what I said to you. Like, he's there, go and ask him.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's not this fella who won't talk to you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and I've had many a conversation about games with him. Mm. And like, do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And like, look, the man was an incredible player, regardless of what you think of him. He played in my position. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He can make me a better player.
I want to talk to you about a few other things. We're going to take a very short break. Our football coverage is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. If you're just tuning in, you may have picked up the voice. It's David Myler we're talking to. Back in just one second.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Returning football shirts to the fans. Join the movement today by using #SaveOurShirt.
Welcome back. We've been enjoying a brilliant conversation with David Myler. You're going to be a natural in the media, by the way. Whatever the hell you want to do, just make sure you get a good agent, because you're going to do just fine. Are you interested in media?
Look, obviously, I'm at that transition from, you know, retiring to what's next. Like, as weirdly as it sounds, I've always had a keen interest in gaming. I find it, like, people know, those people say, oh, got in the way of football, you cared more about gaming. If you know me, you know it didn't.
Mm.
Like, that's what I'm saying. If people who know me know what playing, you know, football meant to me. It all started with me and my wife were joking about it earlier on the way over. Like it was some kid came to me, I think he was only about 11 or 12, and said, oh, could you make a YouTube channel? Because I used to stream, and then he missed them, and he said he had to go to bed, his mum made him go to bed, but could he post on YouTube? So I was like, what am I posting? Where am I going?
Mm.
And I started posting it. But then, like, the transition of sitting down, putting a camera on yourself, talking to a camera on your own with all the noise in the background, it just kind of, like, helps you in a way, like, you know?
Because you're close to 400,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, that all started, I started it, and then you get a little bit, you know, you put it on Twitter, and a few people subscribe, and then I got talking to a few fellas who are big YouTubers in the FIFA scene.
Yeah.
Were like, oh, you know, if you get 100,000, you get a big plaque. And I was like, do you?
A plaque?
Yeah.
I'm interested. How good are you at it? Give it to me in global terms. Are you in the top 5% in the world?
Oh. Basically, right? Every weekend, you play a certain amount of games. So this year, it's like 30 games. You have to play between 7 a.m. Friday morning and Monday morning, 7 a.m. So you have to squeeze 30 games out.
How long are the games?
12 minutes, okay. 6 minutes and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been many an argument at my household for that.
No kidding.
It had to be balanced and structured. Once the wife makes plans, I can't go, I can't miss it. But I've finished in the top 100 in the world.
Oof, that puts you in the top 0.0001%. Well,
am I good enough to compete with those lads? No. I think I am.
Can you make money? Are you good enough to make money out of this for the rest of your life?
The money's nothing. Well, no, sorry, I take that back. There is money in it. But if you look at like Fortnite, like I don't know how much you know. Like, that's fine. There was a 16-year-old from America won 3 million.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah. FIFA is like, FIFA one competition a year, which is like their World Cup, which is for $250,000.
Mm.
Like, whereas Fortnite have regular tournaments for like hundreds of thousands.
Would you not get good at Fortnite now?
I do play it. I do play it. But, and the scary thing is, you know, people come to me and they're like, oh, you play all this gaming, whatever, like you should be concentrating on football. The problem most people don't know is I'm the only one broadcasting it.
But I'm not dismissive of it in any way, because you know, I was like any kid growing up, I played FIFA, got FIFA every Christmas. You know, we were that house as well, don't get me wrong. And we liked the thing in our house, we weren't bad at it. So, you know,
Well, that's the thing with FIFA, everyone thinks they're good.
Yeah,
everyone
I'm sure.
Thinks they're good.
But like I get there's a huge amount of skill, strategy, you got to think about it, you got to know about football to play it well, I'm sure as well. So
But there's certain mechanics in the game.
Yes.
And then it's how well can you exploit them? Like for anyone watching this who plays FIFA 19, the meta became all about crossing the ball in.
Right. In 2002, I remember, there was a Ronaldo turn that got you by everyone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you have to master that you can use it all the time. And then you know.
So each year, do you have to acquire a new key skill set that's going to be the key to unlocking this latest version of FIFA?
Yeah. Yeah.
And some years, are you better than others then?
No. I think FIFA 17 was my first year kind of playing properly.
What's the best FIFA there's been?
I've played all of them back up until, like, I'm going to say FIFA 2000. I played all of them all the way along. But I played probably FIFA 2000 to FIFA 2016.
Yeah.
Like, as in, you come around my house, let's have a couple of games of FIFA, then leave it. It might come back to in a week or 2 weeks. So in FIFA 17, I started playing a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I probably love FIFA 17 and 18. 19 was a bit different.
Different sounds like a euphemism.
Yeah, they tried to change too much.
Okay. Just to touch on Premier League life for a second as we wrap this up. Something which I feel like I wouldn't ask this of a lot of people in here, but I feel like it's something you can kind of handle and take in the right way, because it's a bit grubby to bring this up. But actually, if we're talking about the dream, becoming an Irish footballer, becoming a Premier League footballer, there is this thing which is, at a very young age, you have stupid amounts of money arriving into your bank account. It's not the real world. It's not what your friends are making. It's not probably what your family are making. Like, it's a bit mad. Was that just all the way brilliant and this is amazing and I'm so lucky and this is as great as you would dream? Or did it bring its own stresses? Did you ever feel out of kilter with your friends or family? Did you ever feel guilt?
No. Simply because I'm very lucky. I remember when my daughter was born, like my wife said to me, like, do you ever give your parents money? I said, no. Like, don't get me wrong, I treated my mum to various different things, like for birthdays, Mother's Day, whatever. My mum. But my parents have never asked me for anything. Ever. Like, I come from a very independent household. Like, there's four of us, my mum, my dad, my sister, and myself. Sister does her own thing. She's living in Wexford, she's a teacher. Like, we kind of, like, it gets thrown around in my, I don't need you. Do you know what I mean? Everyone in my family will say that to the other, like, do you know what I mean? We're all very independent and we're all, like, my parents never asked me for anything, sister never asked me for anything. Like, the only thing I'd say, like, my dad has ever asked me for a ticket for a game.
Sure, but that's...
Yeah, exactly, but, no, like... Problem.
That's different.
But I do know boys that have, like paying out huge amounts to, like, parents, sisters, like, paying for sisters' houses, paying for their parents' house. Yeah, it's great, you're getting paid excess amount of money, but, like, I think, luckily enough for me, I've always been, I've never, like I said, I never had to fork out, you know, I mean, I did treat them to different things or whatever, but to know that my kids have come, the shop has tightened right up that,
I'm sure, yeah.
Because, like I said to my wife all the time, I don't need anything anymore. I just want my kids to have the best of everything, go to good schools, get a good education, make sure that everything's for them, because I had everything growing up and she had too. So we want that for them. But
so it was never a stress, it was never intimidating, it was never, I don't know what to do.
Oh, it's great. yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? When they were like, first time for Sunderland, I got my signed on bonus, I was like, oh, what's going on here? Like, do you know what I mean?
I'd say you want to run around the pitch a few times, screaming.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
What was the dumbest thing you bought?
Give me a minute, I'll think of something.
You seem like a level-headed enough fella who didn't go
but sure, look, we've all had our moments.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, I remember when I was about 19, I had 3 cars or something. Just like an idiot. But I like cars.
Yeah.
But I had a beautiful Audi A3. But then I bought, like, a classic M3 BMW, an E30 model. And I bought, like, a Mark II Golf GTI. Do you know what I mean? They were just, like, I did not need... It's just like...
You grow out of it, though.
Yeah, quickly. I've changed cars so many times now, I just do not care.
Is Premier League life as kind of amazing as it looks? Like, the stadium's just amazing, the buzz, the colour.
Everything.
In the tunnel, it's, being on TV, it's just the business.
Yeah, but, like, it was such a humble experience, you know. I went to Coventry Unknown. So, like, I went and met a young, fresh, eager... Like, I was the second oldest at 29, which is, like, really, you'd expect to have the odd 31, 32, 33-year-old. Where all these young fellas, hungry, like, every day, loved it, but they were desperate to go to your Hulls, your Reddings.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? To see the stadiums. I remember I did my shoulder, but we played Sunderland away, and I was like, to the manager, I'll go to the game because, I play for Sunderland, and I know so many people there. But they were all, like, in awe of the stadium, the atmosphere, everything. And I was there thinking, like, do you know, it was weird. But then, like I said, that's League One to Championship.
Yeah.
And then it's like you go into Premier League where it's like, it's a total different kettle of fish.
Was it surreal in the tunnel sometimes looking over and seeing certain players?
Yeah, it was. But they're the moments you live for.
Oh, sure, that's, yeah.
Like, I remember we played Liverpool. I first played Liverpool at Anfield. And so obviously Jordan's playing for Liverpool, and we're waiting to kick off, and they play You'll Never Walk Alone, and I'm singing it, and Stevie nudges him, going, what's your mate doing? And he's a big Liverpool fan. I was there, like, I was singing You'll Never Walk Alone. Like, do you know what I mean? It was I loved it, you know. And it's weird, a weird one that came to me the other day, you know. I was watching Spurs on the telly, like, a couple of weeks ago, and obviously they've gone into their new stadium, and I'm just like, do you know what, I played White Hart Lane. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, I've never played in the new stadium, but I was like, I played Moy Dart Lane.
Nice one.
Do you know.
What were your favourite stadiums?
Anfield, Old Trafford. I actually quite like Wembley.
The new Wembley, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never played the old one. Yeah. Because I like, had the playoff final, FA Cup semi-final. Obviously, I had the FA Cup final. But, like, even you look back at the FA Cup final, it was just like, to the highest attended game at Wembley. I think it was 91,500.
Wow.
And then, like, to be 2-0 up, under 10 minutes. It was just surreal. I know we got beat in the end, but, like, you look back at it and fond memories.
What players, I hate to ask the toughest opponent type question, but can you give us a sense of, like, the genius of some of them, or the ones that kind of linger in the memory a bit?
The two that kind of stand out for me, I was so young, my first time experiencing Frank Lampard. It's like everyone classed him as this, centre midfielder or whatever. Frank was more of a number 10. Like, we played Chelsea, and I remember Steve Bruce called myself and Jordan into the shower room, Chelsea. So he was like, Myler, you're up against Lampard. He said, Henderson, you're up against Ballack. He said, the two of them, their legs are gone. He said, you'll run all over them. I'd have been 20, Jordan would have been 19. Mm. And we were like, right, we know what we're doing. And he said, just watch Lampard's run to the box. And he said, Ballack likes to turn, blah, blah, blah. And I'll never forget, I looked up at the clock. I was 20 minutes gone. Lampard was running off celebrating. And we were, I'm going to say, 3 or 4 nil down. I got beat 7-2 that day. It was a good learning curve. Mm. Second one was like, second player, like David Silva. It's just, he defies like this idea of Premier League football in the sense that like everyone's like dead quick, dead strong, dead skillful. You have a fella who's probably 5'6", 5'7". He's not strong, uses his body very well, but you cannot get near him. It's just, it's nearly a joy to play against him, to like feel you're on the same pitch as him. Like, he'll just get the ball and he'll know when to take one touch, two touch, when he can like take it past you. It's just so clever, and these players are special. Mm. Like, I remember, I don't know if you saw it, I put on Twitter, like, where would you rate him amongst the great midfielders?
Yeah, you had him top five, was it?
Well, I never rated him, but I'd certainly have him up there in that category with like your Keane, Gerrard, Scholes, Vieira, Lampard.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'd put him above them.
But he's in that bracket.
Yeah, he's up there, yeah. He has to be. Mm. Like, it comes down, you know, everyone says Henri is the greatest foreign striker, import or whatever, but Aguero's got a better goals to ratio game.
Do you have Aguero above Henri?
I don't know. But you see, Henri played, I know he played a striker, but he played the majority off the left coming in.
Sure.
And with that beautiful finesse finish.
Yeah.
But like, you can't knock what Aguero's done.
Yeah. No, you can't. Boy, just something will never let me put him above Henri.
Who do you support?
United growing up.
Okay.
I've drifted out of it now. It's hard to have Jesse Lingard your hero in life after a while, you know.
Well, he's still a young pup, isn't he, at 27.
That's the problem.
Yeah, I know.
I'm too old for
it's
that.
It's the baby face he has.
To wrap it up then, like, it seems, you know, life is good. Your beautiful tweet about your birth of children and stuff, and all that's good now. And you told me you went through tough times, and you've got to a point now where family is good. When life was maybe tricky off the pitch, was football a release for you, or did your form suffer when you're going through tough times in your life?
It's like when you cross that white line, that's all that's there. You can't think about nothing else. Like the night Seamus broke his leg, my wife had a miscarriage that morning.
Oh my God. Right.
And I knew James McCarthy might be struggling. And Martin said, you might be starting because James is struggling.
Had she phoned you and you're over in Ireland?
Yeah.
Right.
So I laugh about it now, like, but at the time there was no laughing matter. She obviously, it happened naturally, so I don't want to go into too much detail.
No,
but
don't.
Like, ambulances had to come to the house. So she's ringing me. I'm in Ireland. I'm in the hotel, like, trying to prepare for a game. So then she gets rushed to hospital. Luckily enough, now I have a pair of neighbours across the road, Graham and Sue, amazing people, came over, minded my little girl. Then Curtis Davis and his wife came, because Callie was really good friends with Laura. She came to mind Alana, because Alana's like familiar with her and whatever.
Yeah.
So Callie was in the hospital, and she was off the walls. Then her mum had to come over. So it was kind of like, what do I do? What do I do?
I mean, you must think, I've got to go. Or did you know I'm not going?
I can't say I didn't know I was going. I spoke to my father. Father said, you have to go. It's your wife, like, you know, it's your family, you have to go. And then Martin, I went and spoke to Martin. Martin says, you have to go. And then as the time went by, like, it just became like, when can I get there? And this is the God's honest truth, is when can I get there? I wouldn't have gotten there. Like, she was rushed into hospital about 11:30, 12 o'clock. I wouldn't have gotten there till about like 5-6 o'clock. So I was kind of like, what do I do? What do I do? And then she was like, look, I'm okay now. Everything's fine. So then I was like, oh, do I go? And like, blah, blah, blah. And then I just said, you know what, a little bit more time passed by, and she said, look, I'm all right, I'm fine. So then I made a decision to stay. Look, should I have gone? Yeah, I heard about it when I went home. She said, you weren't from there, mama. But then I see in my household, if you say, you're fine, do you know what I mean? Mm. Like if she turned to me and said, I really need you here, I was gone.
Of course, yes.
She'd said, I'm fine, and I was thinking, right, she's all right. And like I knew her mom, her dad were there, mm. do you know what I mean? My daughter was fine, blah, blah, blah. And then I ended up playing the game. James got injured in the warm-up, I believe. And then I remember I was warming up, we were just kicking a few balls around, and then Mick, the kit man, ran out and was like, Myler, the manager wants you, and he's like, you're starting. So, played. I believe we drew nil all.
Was it difficult to play? Like, does it, when you're waiting for a kick out, do those thoughts cross your mind?
Weirdly enough, like, do you know, that was obviously the night James broke his leg. So like, as much as I was dealing with my own things, I tend to deal with things differently than my wife. Like at the moment, she's scared that in 6 months' time, my retirement will hit me rather than now. She deals with things then and there. I tend to like worry about her, and then 4 or 5 months down the road, it hits me. Like
right.
That happened with the miscarriages.
Right.
But then even then, I was concerned about Seamus. Like thinking, is he all right and whatever, blah, blah, blah. But like we all go through difficult times or whatever, it's how we deal with them. Probably took me 4 or 5 months to deal with that then. Do you know what I mean? At the time, I could probably just bog myself down in football and, do you know what I mean, concentrate. No, I'd play the game. Mm. I'm thinking the manager's putting huge faith in me here. Like, he could have easily picked someone else. I need to repay him with a performance. Do you know what I mean?
It's extraordinary. Like, in a million years watching that game, just not thinking that, you know, when you...
Yeah, of course. And then you're like, you even... Do you know what I mean?
He's probably saying, how did Myler play? Yeah, he wasn't, you know, could have
yeah,
been better.
Yeah, but that's the thing, like... It's the all, like... Suicide is the biggest killer of men, isn't it? Because they don't want to talk about anything. And
did you go and talk to anyone 5 months later when it hits you? Did you go and see a counsellor? And
I did, yeah.
Your guts out, yeah, good.
Yeah, right, I had to, yeah, I had to.
Yeah.
It was quite funny, like, because... You put on a brave act and you kind of go into acting. I'm not saying I'm an actor, but sure. You go into training and you put on a brave face and you and then you go home and then it's just like, fuck, oh, like what's going on? Mm. It was lucky enough when the physio said to Brian Lennon at the time, is he all right? And he just went, no. And he just went, no. And your man said, what's up? And next minute I was in the office with the head physio and the doctor and they said, what's going on? And I came clean and they were like, okay, I went to see someone, sat down, had a couple of counselling sessions.
Help?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. It did. I did find it a bit difficult.
To open up. Right.
It was probably his way of approaching me. Like, he asked me, was I suicidal? I said, no. I think no matter how bad it is, I can get out of it. Mm. That was just my outlook of it all. And I said, I have enough close family and friends around me that no matter how hard it gets, I can get out. Mm. But then he started putting that in my head and I was thinking, like, I was like, why is he asking me all this? Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've gone through a shit time, like, or whatever, like, but like I said, I haven't dealt with it properly, but I'm coming out the other side.
Yeah, unless it's in his training somewhere. I mean, I'm no expert, obviously,
yeah.
That he needs to eliminate that first, see if there's an immediate
danger. Of course, yeah. But like...
You didn't love that, I guess. It's not a nice question.
It took me way back. Like, and I was kind of like, it hit me hard in the sense like I don't know what they told him, like the doctor, whatever. Mm. I don't know what he was expecting. Mm. Do you know what I mean? He has to find a basis or whatever. But like, I was just like, I did struggle for the first couple of sessions in the sense of like, you know, is he looking at me differently here or whatever? Like, but. It did help, and I would advise anyone, do you know what I mean? And it was, the funny thing about it all was, when I did speak about it, I had friends I played with, close friends, they kind of said, wouldn't you ring me?
I said,
wouldn't you ring me? And they kind of go, well, I didn't know. And I said, just ring me and say, what's happening? Mm. Everything all right? How's life? How's the family? Blah, blah, blah. And I said...
Would you have opened up to them?
Yeah, I think I would have. Mm. Certain fellas you would, certain sure, you wouldn't, sure. Like. But, like, now I make a conscious effort every now and then. I'll ring a host, I'll text a host of fellas, just out of the, like, randomly. Fellas I have good time for. Mm. And just say, like, how's things, how's life, are you all right?
I'd say sometimes you get back the answer, no, not great.
Yeah, you do, yeah. I had a buddy, I won't say his name, but he's fine now, but he's going through a horrific time. And he only opened up to me when I said, well, he said to me, when did you ring me? And I said, well, when did you ring me? Mm. And he said, well, while we're chatting about it,
yeah,
where we went.
To finish on a slightly happier note, must be magical to be a parent then and come out the other end of it.
Yeah, because, do you know, like, I like to put, like, perspective in life.
Mm.
Like, I'm very, very blessed to have my daughter. So we did 3 miscarriages, and now I have a perfectly healthy boy. Who's 5 months old in a few days. But, like, as weird as it sounds, as much as I love him, if we hadn't have gone through that stage, then we wouldn't have had him. And now I have him, do you know? So, you know, people say, like, oh, you made the wrong choice in your career going to Reading, but I would have never had my son if I hadn't. So, like, people can say what they want, it didn't work out, but, hey, would I have done it? Do you know what I mean? To have another child, yeah, of course I would. Mm. I'd do it all again in the morning.
Mm. Right, that was a hell of a chat.
Ah,
you well, feeling all right about it?
Yeah, no, look.
We don't, I mean, this is going out tomorrow. Call me, call us if you want any of it taken out, but you don't strike me as the kind of person.
No, because, you know, it's kind of, you can easily revert around the question. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Any question that's put to you, you can lead it down any way you want, so I'm well aware of how it works.
Okay, well listen, geez, congratulations on your career. Some of those caps now, I look at them in a totally different light.
You forgot the Vienna,
the
highlight.
You were the one that gave it to Wes.
Hey, like I said to you, made a career of giving the ball to a better player.
Yeah, I'd say you looked up for Wes more often than not, did you?
Yeah, well, we joked about it.
Yeah, the other night.
I remember the amount of games I used to pull Wes before. I'm just like, whenever I have the ball, where are you? I said, I'm only passing. And there was times I would just fire the ball at him. You even look at, I'm going to say the Moldova game. If you probably won't remember it.
Mm.
Wes switches the ball out to Wardy. Wardy goes down, crossing, Big Murph scores. I think I'm right there now. But I give the ball to Wes.
Right.
I only give it to him, I'm pretty sure it's only 4 or 5 yards. And she's like, take it and go in, like.
Be Wes.
Just, yeah, do you. Do you know what I mean? But that's the type of player Wes was. You needed Wes, because he's a magical little player.
Yeah, he sure was. Listen, thanks so much for coming in and the chat, and congratulations on the career. I'm sure you get a huge reaction to this interview, and deservedly so. And I know you're being presented to the crowd tonight. I kind of wish they'd all hear this interview first. Unfortunately, they won't.
I know, they'll have token questions like, come on, Ireland!
But listen, brilliant. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
No problem. Appreciate it.
With guilt like your eyes.